You're listening to the Flasco Oncopod, brought to you by the Florida Society of Clinical Oncology, the voice of oncology in Florida.
All right. Thank you for joining us for part two in our four-part series of this podcast that is focused on advancing care in GI and biliary tract cancers. Today, we have Dr. Patel and Dr. Gayuri here, where we will be focusing on HER2 testing in biliary tract cancers and gastroesophageal adenocarcinoma. So as we know, HER2 is a biomarker that has been around in oncology for numerous years, most notably in breast cancer. However, we know that some GI cancers overexpress HER2 as well. So biliary tract cancer in up to 30% of cases, and gastroesophageal adenocarcinoma in about 20% of cases. Therefore, it really is critical to evaluate these patients for their HER2 status, as there are targeted treatment options that exist for these patients. So maybe I'll start. Would either of you be able to speak to what some of the current guideline recommendations are for testing patients with BTC and GEA for their HER2 status? What is the appropriate method to test them with, and what is the appropriate timing to test patients?
So I think because treatment options are available for HER2 positive patients, so we actually recommend getting into first line testing from get-go, because that actually explores other options for treatments. There are three ways to test the patients with HER2. One is IHC, that actually assesses HER2 protein overexpressions. Other FISH or in situ hybridizations and access HER2 gene amplifications. And then our favorite way all the time is NGS, that assesses HER2 gene amplifications and also identify some mutations and ability to assess numerous biomarkers at the same time along with HER2. So that is what we recommend into it.
Dr. Gayuri, can you maybe talk to us a little bit more about the different ways in which we can measure HER2 status and how we interpret some of those results?
Sure. For HER2 status, basically, HER2 is being tested in breast cancer for many, many years. But after the TOGA trial in 2010 was published, around that 2010, 2011, HER2 testing was entered the GI cancers first, starting from gastroesophageal adenocarcinoma, but expanded to esophagus, gastric, and also they are trying it. There are a couple of clinical trials on colon. They are trying it on biliary cancers. How to test the HER2. So in pathology, we have come through two different guidelines to how to interpret the HER2, especially IHC. It's a breast guideline and it's a GI guideline. So basically for all the GI cancers now, for gastroesophageal, gastric, esophageal, colon, or biliary, we use the GI guideline, which is different from breast guideline. And this is based on the guideline that first developed and validated for the TOGA trial. We use the same guideline from that trial. And so a very simple way on every cancer that we want to test, the simplest way is just do the IHC, basically using antibody against it. And the staining, it's a test that can be done in like 24 hours. And we get the result, and then how to interpret that. And GI is different than breast. So the way that we interpret that in GI is the grading it at the staining pattern is 3+, 2+, 1+, or 0. And we use the criteria that was set at TOGA trial. So for 3+, if we see a visible membranous tumor staining, at 4x of 4x, which actually it's set to 2.5 to 5x, but most of our microscopes have 4x lens. So we examine the stain. If we see the staining at 4x, and then we go up, make sure the staining should be membranous, lateral, or basolateral. That will qualify for the 3+, and that's good. That's HER2 positive. But if we didn't see it at 4x, but then we go on a 10x power lens, we see lateral or basolateral, then that's equivocal 2+, which for those we're going to switch to doing the in situ hybridization. And if we see the staining at the 4DX power, then that would be a 1+. And also the staining, the amount, and if we don't see any stain, that's 0+. How much staining is needed for the GI cancers? We need at least in biopsy a cluster of 5 cohesive cells. That's the minimum that we can actually call it positive. So something that we call positive for GI, a breast pathologist will call it negative for breast. Breast requirement are at least 10% of the tumor cells on this slide, either biopsy or resection specimen. But in GI, for biopsy, a cluster of 5 cells is enough. And if it's a resection specimen, at least 10% of resected tumor.
That's great. And maybe Dr. Gayori, you can speak to as well. What are some of the challenges from the pathology perspective that you may encounter when receiving some of these samples? You know, I know that tissue sampling can be a bit difficult to obtain, especially in biliary tract cancers, occasionally in GEA as well. But what are some considerations there from a pathology perspective? And then maybe Dr. Patel, afterwards, if you are able to speak to sort of what methods you're currently using, whether that's IHC-ish or NGS as the preferred method. And so Dr. Gayori, I'll start with you.
Okay, so the challenges in HER2 testing in GI cancers, I would say the criteria guideline for interpreting the IHC in GI cancers really needs to be taught to pathologists, because some has that background of reading HER2 in a breast cancer, and they kind of going to that direction to apply those, and they might call something that would have been called positive by a GI pathologist, they might call it equivocal or negative. So that's something that pathologists should be really trained to the guidelines how to interpret the IHC. I would say IHC is good because with a smaller sample of tumor, we can actually test it for the but in GI cancers, because of heterogeneity, one sample might not give you the patient's really actual status, because it could be negative and the next biopsy could show a focus that is positive. But so, and then for doing the in situ hybridization, I guess it's actually more objective, and it's done the similar to what is done in breast, so that won't be a problem. And for the NGS, I would say tissue adequacy is also a big issue, because to doing a molecular test, say we have to have at least 1,000 cell, like a 10 unstained from a tumor that has 10% cellularity. So we need to have a little bit more tissue when we have that. So they can actually extract enough DNA to complete a NGS. But the good thing is that NGS is going to give us a lot more information regarding a lot of other targets. And I guess that's it.
No, that's great. Thank you. So it
Yeah.
sounds like then, based on what you said, Dr. Gayori, it's really important to have a pathologist that understands the different guidelines for GI cancers versus breast cancers in terms of assessing IHC status. Dr. Patel, I'll turn it over to you for your thoughts.
Yeah, so Dr. Gowda mentions really great points about IHC, in situ hybridizations and NGS testing. A lot of time you get IHC testing come back as a 2+, and we've got to make sure it is a 2+, 1+, or 3+, because it is, as she mentioned about it, we've got to have pathologists who are trained into looking into GI malignancy and biliary malignancy, because there are some 10 drugs approved in 3+ settings only. And so if you have a 2+, and if the patients really have 3+, if you recognize that, they may be not able to benefit from the really good life-prolonging medications onto it. So it is very important for to get a good ideas on a good grasp on those 2+ versus 3+. Or IHC negative now, and NGS setting you get ERBB2 positive because it looks at a broad category of HER2 family. But if they are not approved drugs, like certain drugs are only approved for IHC 3+, then it is really basic things for us to do is making sure we get correct answer with IHC and go from there. And IHC does not require a lot of tissue, as Dr. Gayu mentioned. It requires a few cells, few slides, and ready to go.
No, that's great. Thank you for sharing that. So it sounds like then a sort of comprehensive approach to molecular testing is really important in this setting as well, based on the different methodologies and the amount of tissue you're able to obtain to make sure you really have a clear read on a patient's HER2 status. I know you mentioned, Dr. Patel, that you are testing patients at sort of first line. Is this at first line at, in terms of at diagnosis, at advanced metastatic disease? What is your current approach for both BTC and GEA patients in this case?
So right now we are testing in a first-line metastatic. So patients who are deemed to be non-curable patients who are referred to us for a palliative approach or palliative treatments, that those are the patient needs to be tested. Now it currently we still don't have an adjuvant setting on onto it, so approved drugs. So right now we are mainly testing in the patients who are palliative advanced malignancy.
Okay, got it. Thank you for sharing that. And maybe I can ask you both to comment on, the importance of, the oncologist and the pathologist working together, to ensure, that there's appropriate tissue sampling that's done, appropriate interpretation of the tissue sample to assess HER2 status, and really, maybe what are some of your practical guidance or advice on how to best collaborate between pathology and oncology to really serve the patient and make sure that they're getting the best care. So maybe Dr. Gayori, if you would like to respond first.
Definitely, that's really necessary to collaborate with oncologists and pathologists, almost on every part of the oncology, the diagnosis and the testing and all that. Sometimes there are cases that the result doesn't match, like the IHC result didn't match with the NGS result, and it's always good that it's something that is being brought up by either, and then we discuss it when we go back and we review it, all the testing that we have again, and we come to a conclusion.
Yeah, so in that case, then it sounds like how often do you see that sort of happen? I'm just curious, and then how do you work with the oncologist to resolve some of those challenging cases?
During my I have been here for more than 15 years at Moffitt, and I can tell you that I remember one time that there was a IHC that I read it like 2+, and then it was very small sample, and then when the patient had a bigger biopsy and the biopsy was sent for NGS, NGS came out that showed that there is mutation. There is amplification mutation. So, and we went back and did another biopsy, and that biopsy was actually 3+ positive. So it really depends on a specimen. Every
Okay.
specimen to other specimen can give a different result and sometimes don't match because we tested different specimens. And because heterogeneity is more common in GI cancer, gastroesophageal adenocarcinoma than in breast cancer. So we can get sometimes a slightly different result between different biopsy or even resection specimen.
Okay, great. And Dr. Patel, what's your perspective on that? How do you sort of best work with your pathology teams and ensure, appropriate testing and timing and interpretation in determining a potential care plan for a patient?
So I agree with Dr. Gauri about it. We do closely collaborate with pathologists. I have them on my speed dial most of the times, and a lot of time we collaborate during the tumor board. But issues with, as Dr. Gauri mentioned, is different part of us tumors may give you different results. So a lot of time, if I have IHC 2+ and if a patient progression occurs, we like to biopsy again. And see if that is or if he can get a tissue, because biliary can malignancy tissue is going to be very short supply. It's hard to get original make a diagnosis into it. Once you make a diagnosis, it's you always ERCP brushing, it came back positive, or maybe FNA. That is a very, very fine needle. We always complain to lung doctors about getting the FNA, but the GI doctors, even FNA for biliary tract, it's a very small needle, so very small tissue. When you get a real specimen out from a body, that's always a different testing. And also, prior treatment affects your HER2 positivity and negativity too. Prior, if you had not received any treatments, they're more likely if IHC 2+, we can test it and there is more likely to be different. But if it's IHC 3+ patients, you give a prior anti-HER2 therapy and you probably had progression, you biopsy again, but likely to be, could occur negative too. So that is really important. So when we have progressions, we do again like to test a specimen back again.
Okay, so testing at progression as well is a practice that it seems like you're employing. That's really great to hear, especially like you said, given some of the tumor heterogeneity that we see in GI cancer specifically. I guess maybe one last question that I'll leave for the both of you. I guess where do you see sort of the future of HER2 testing in GI cancers, maybe as it relates to guideline, either updates or recommendations or sort of management, given some of the tissue heterogeneity that we do see, are there any sort of existing gaps in care that you would like to see addressed in the future?
Dr. Gayuri may be able to can answer that guidelines questions really well.
Okay. Regarding the what we see is that in overall GI cancers, we see that HER2 testing is spreading toward almost other organs too. Esophageal, gastroesophageal, stomach. Now we have clinical trials in colon and biliary cancer. So and I think it's going to spread more all the areas that weren't being used from the beginning. And regarding the guideline, I think I'm not aware of any really a large study done to actually correlate. Maybe if we do that between the institution and we correlate the IHC and I mean HER2 testing result with the molecular result, and we can reset the guideline to read IHC. But really, we need to do a larger study to come to that. But I don't see, I haven't seen much like discrepancy between the molecular result or IHC result. So one day we can look it up and come up with a change or reset our guidelines.
That's great. Dr. Patel, any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, so the final thoughts on it, the industry has been developing some good anti-HER2 therapies for us, for patients with biliary and GA malignancy, including breast malignancy. We have great anti-HER2 therapies, but certain anti-HER2 therapies have been approved only on one testing. If we can make an inclusion of those clinical trials to include broader categories of patients, if there are ERBB2 mutations or gene amplifications, FISH-related, along with IHC, that actually may help explore and may benefit more patients. They may have done so those in the past, but on a smaller scale. But I think if we include more criteria to it, it may actually help more patients to it. I'm pretty sure that certain drugs that are approved and available in the market for anti-HER2 therapies may have good benefits to ERBB2 patients also. But currently, they're excluded in clinical trials. You cannot get those medications approved by insurances. And that's where we need to get that inclusions of those tests, patients, and that may actually help it significantly to the community as well as patients.
No, that's great. Thank you both so much for joining today and for the great discussion. Please, folks, stay tuned for episode 3 of this podcast installment, which will cover different mechanisms of action of different HER2 agents that are available in GI cancers. So thank you again, Dr. Gyori, Dr. Patel, for joining us. Very much appreciate the lively discussion and insights.
Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Nice meeting you.